Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Hi, this is Lieutenant General Tom McInerney, U.S. Air Force retired, former fighter pilot. If you want to know what's going on and get the straight scoop in America, listen to Audrey Russo on Real Talk Radio. Thank you.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Is the globalist communist left blatantly spending its time and energy infecting and brainwashing America with its corrupt creed? And we've discussed Bruce and Nellie Orr's part in the soft coup attempt against a duly elected president. Do new DOJ documents prove this? Well, we're going to find out more with my next guest. For my new listeners, Diana West is the author of several best-selling books, including The Death of the Grown-Up, How America's Arrested Development is Bringing Down Western Civilization, and American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. And she's the author of the new bestseller, The Red Thread, A Search for Ideological Drivers Inside the Anti-Trump Conspiracy. She's a former nationally syndicated conservative American columnist whose blog is one of Newsmax's 50 best conservative blogs, which tackles controversial subjects such as the impact of Islam and the failures of counterinsurgency. Diana has contributed essays and features to numerous periodicals, including The Wall Street Journal, The Weekly Standard, and The Washington Post. She has also been a columnist for The Washington Times, Scripps Howard News Service, and United Media, and she can be read at The Daily Caller. Diana is also a popular analyst and contributor on both radio and TV. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Diana West. Here's my...
Thank you, Audrey. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a wonderful sound.
It would be great an alarm clock, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would get me up.
I might get up in the morning.
You're funny. Yeah, I can't believe now we're at the end of the summer. Incredible or what?
Incredible or what? I know.
I'm happy about it personally. But anyway...
Yeah, fall is the greatest time, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what? We're going to jump in right here. Your piece, which was brilliant, by the way, the brainwashing war on America's mind and soul, which I encourage listeners after the show to read. The communist left is behind this really despicable attack on Americans who support our American-loving president. We are falsely accused of being racist, white supremacist, haters, blah, blah, blah. And leaders of this movement in the media and politics are not so subtly advocating violence against us as we saw in the milieu that the Third Reich encouraged in Germany before the Holocaust. Is my statement off course or am I spot on?
I think you're spot on. I think that as shocking as that can sound, and it is a shocking concept, we are seeing the same kind of pattern of conditioning on the left toward anyone who disagrees with them and supports President Trump. And maybe that should be really the proper way of phrasing it. Anyone who disagrees with them by supporting President Trump, there is a range of protected political belief that would include what we used to think of as the right, but after the advent of President Trump, that is now sort of consigned to the resistance, never Trump, the establishment, rhinos, etc. So in other words, the uniparty is still okay, whether you call yourself a Republican or you call yourself a Democrat. That's still fine. They basically agreed on all the important issues. However, if you come out as a patriot who wants to reestablish the nation state with borders, with immigration policy control, with manufacturing made in USA, etc., you are the enemy. And it's not the thing that's important, I think, here for people to understand is this is not really something that is debatable to the left, to the uniparty. It's not a matter of changing minds. It's not a matter of making better arguments. This is a point of view that was supposed to have been extinct, and after it rose and actually took the White House in 2016, it became the number one domestic enemy for these people. And that's why I think we are seeing this effort to not just disagree, not just debate, not just have this rousing political exchange. We're seeing an effort to demonize it to a point of delegitimizing it, which does harken back to earlier totalitarian systems where an enemy of the state, whether it was Jews in Germany or another enemy population in the Ukraine going back to the 1930s in the then new Soviet Union, the so-called kulaks, who were just simply people who owned little farms, maybe one cow, that would qualify you as this enemy of the people, they too were demonized to a point of being untermenschen, not worthy of living, not worthy of having rights, and indeed we saw mass extermination of both of these populations and many others if we start going through the history of totalitarian bloodshed. So this is why I think it's very important to actually listen up here and not just see this as ridiculous, which it is, to call people who support Donald Trump or Donald Trump a white supremacist or a racist. It's ridiculous, but it's also very dangerous. And that's why I wrote this piece for Epic Times that goes into this. And I think it's just something that we really need to start taking seriously because it could get dangerous quickly.
Yeah, there's a lot of examples, but I want to give one here. WAPO's Jennifer Rubin called for the shaming of the supporters of President Trump, which she argued was part of a plan to burn down the GOP and start from new, which I'll get back to that in a second. She said it's not only that Trump has to lose, but that all his enablers, which is us, by the way, have to lose. Right. We have to collectively, in essence, burn down the Republican Party. We have to level them because if there are survivors, if there are people who weather this storm, they will do it again. End of quote. This is typical, of course, of the left who gets away with inciting to they incite to violence. What did she mean by burn down the GOP? And if there are survivors, is she not walking the precipice of incitement?
Absolutely. And I would also note that this is not new for Jennifer Rubin and these other people on the Never Trump right, whether we call them conservative or not. There was this surge, what I called the conservative crack up going back to 2015 and 2016, where these comments were constant in the sort of punditocracy of which Jennifer Rubin is a part. Rick Wilson was one, Bill Kristol was another, Max Boot, Eric Erickson. I actually put together something I called the Rights Trump, Anti-Trump Lexicon, it was also quite often scatological and foul. And one of the reasons I put it together was this was at a point where people were attacking Donald Trump for being crude, using language that was unworthy of presidential politics, civil discourse, etc. And they were using worse language to describe him. So I actually have an A through Z, quite extensive, really quite shocking lexicon in which Jennifer Rubin plays a part. And just getting to your question, this same notion of burning down the Republican Party or anyone in it who supported Donald Trump. They called them back in the day being 2016, Vichy Republicans, collaborationists. This was us, people who supported Donald Trump. This was a literal phrase they used. They talk about the Rick Wilson was someone, Republican strategist, who talked about the bloodletting after World War II in France, whereby collaborators or people the communists in France deemed to be collaborators, FYI, would be stood up and shot against a wall.
Yeah.
And this was a cleansing that Rick Wilson was hearkening to and calling for, literally. So Jennifer Rubin is simply reigniting that extremely ugly call to violence, call to demonization that we saw fail in 2016. They're bringing back all these same tropes, you know, Trump's a racist, we're racist, we should be burnt down, etc., because they're so desperate for 2020. And again, it's really what we're watching is kind of this reassembling of the mind manipulators who are attempting to maneuver people into mentally conditioned rejection of the country, of patriotism, of Donald Trump, of wanting a border, of wanting to reestablish the nation state or to continue this program to do so under Donald Trump in a second term. This is why it's so dangerous. It's not, again, it's not an argument. It's not a debate. It's not fact-based. It's not reality-based, and it certainly isn't civil discourse. It's about manipulating people into a state of hysteria. And again, going back to the historical examples, which are so terrifying and rightly so, this is what totalitarian dictators do and have done that have resulted in various holocausts from Germany across the Soviet Union to China to Laos to, you know, all around the world, wherever these people have taken power. They had to eliminate political opposition. They couldn't do it in any sort of winning hearts and minds of people in elections. They did it through violence, through re-education camps, through gulags. This is why it's so dangerous to see this kind of strain so easily expressed. I mean, this isn't something whispered. These are people writing columns in the Washington Post or going on television. So it's a very, very dangerous moment that people need to be extremely wary of and on guard personally and, you know, for safety reasons, but also understanding that it's a game of manipulation and not to buy it.
Yeah. I'm surprised. I have to be honest. I'm surprised that they haven't put out propaganda films depicting us as rodents and it's okay to exterminate us.
That'll be next. I mean, you know, again, going back to 2016, these same conservatives, so-called, George Will, etc., they were calling us Quislings, you know, going back to the term of the traitor, the name of the traitor that became synonymous with treachery from World War II, Quislings, Vichy, you know, the French collaborators with the Nazi government, all these terms that were used to try to pry us away from supporting President Trump. It's really ugly, but look how bankrupt they are. They have nothing else. They're going back to the same failed attempts to manipulate us. And you know, on the one hand, you can say, well, that's good in the sense they don't have anything. But on the other hand, they're trying again. And it is a battle for hearts and minds in our own country. It's very disturbing to watch. But again, we have to sort of understand what it is and reject it and call them out.
Yeah. What's also disturbing is the fact that the GOP is not out there condemning statements like this from Jennifer Rubin, and there's so many of them. I mean, it's too many to count. There's no condemnation, no call for civility, because this is very dangerous. But yet, to me, then it speaks again to the deep state, doesn't it?
Well, it does. The uniparty, the deep state, the interests that were entrenched, that were completely blown up by the election going back to 2016. I mean, this, we're still really in a period of post-2016 election, even as we're coming up to a whole new cycle. Nobody's really gotten a grip on what happened in terms of getting their own powers back. They've done everything they can. They've made tremendous inroads and have successfully, unfortunately and tragically, they've undermined President Trump at every possible turn, but they're still operating in panic, because the panic being that he wins again. So it's like a constant panic button in American politics at this point. Yeah. And yes, the Republican Party needs to call it out. Will they? Probably not. I mean, again, it's President Trump and the deplorables, and that's kind of who it's left to. And I say great, because I don't trust any of these organized political entities any longer, and it really is us and him, and let's try to take it back again, take back the government again, and move forward with his agenda. I mean, that's really our only course. It's our only hope.
Yeah.
However, imperfect it may be, however unsuccessful we may ultimately be, it's our only course.
It is. You're correct. It is. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on Bill Kristol sponsoring Joe Walsh to primary the president?
Oh, it's ridiculous. I don't know if it's a fundraising tactic,
yeah,
or a mental health moment. I mean, this it's ridiculous, and it's a publicity seeking campaign. But it's simply a vehicle of it's probably a publicity attempt to try to keep his name and his efforts against the president getting some kind of press attention, which of course they will, because they're in alignment in terms of their animosity and aggression against the Trump administration.
Yeah. And of course, Joe Walsh lost his audience a long time ago, so I guess he needs a job. So
sure. Yeah.
Right. Well, we've spent several segments on Bruce and Nellie Orr, where you've shared a vast amount of info on their backgrounds and activities so we can understand who they were. But Judicial Watch released documents, it's 330 pages to be exact, from the Justice Department showing Bruce Orr, who was demoted, of course, for the listeners who hadn't listened to the segments, from his position as the U.S. Associate Deputy Attorney General in December 2017, discussing information obtained through his wife, Nellie Orr. This info included, of course, anti-Trump dossier materials, including a spreadsheet that tries to link President Trump to dozens of Russians. If nothing else, doesn't this further confirm your research on the Orrs?
Yes, it does. I would say, yes, we've only seen more information that confirms, my research stemming, of course, from the original House Intelligence Committee memo, which came out in February of 2018, the four-page memo that really contained the mechanism of this particular aspect of the conspiracy against the Trump candidacy. And this would be the use of Nellie Orr, Bruce Orr, Fusion GPS, the Steele dossier, as the predicate, as they say, for government spying on the Trump team. They took this DNC junk that Nellie Orr was writing and funneling through her husband, just Christopher Steele, funneling to various people in the media and the government, and they used this uncorroboratable material to get the FISA court, the secret court, to authorize spying. And this was their way into all of the Trump people through, originally, Carter Page was one vector of this, the very important one. And yes, this is more evidence of this malfeasance. Now, Bruce Orr is still working at the Department of Justice. He's wearing his other hat.
Unbelievable.
There. So it is unbelievable. He's still a taxpayer baby over there. And nothing has really happened since Nellie Orr was questioned, I thought, quite lamely about her own activities. So yes, Judicial Watch has pried out another corroborating piece of evidence, but the real question here is, although I hate that phrase, the real question is, but seriously, the real question here for me is, why didn't the Justice Department release this without forcing Judicial Watch to go to court?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to ask you. Why haven't they? What is this?
Well, what is this? I think this is a big bait and switch. I mean, you and I have talked some about my suspicions about what William Barr's role as Attorney General really is, and I just, again, find his record as Attorney General, as it unfolds, is only confirming my original suspicions that he is a deep state bro, and that his job, as he sees it, and as we will look back on it, this is my prediction. I may be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I hope everyone says, oh, you were crazy. My prediction is we will look back on his tenure as someone who protected the intelligence agencies, the FBI, the whole deep state structure that tried to and continues to try to destroy Donald Trump by not releasing this information that belongs to the American people, by not prosecuting these criminally seditious acts that we're seeing unfold one after another by hook and by crook, and that essentially it is being slow-walked into oblivion. And either the truth, the facts will come out at a point where it doesn't matter anymore. This was something Alexander Solzhenitsyn was very shrewd about in terms of noticing how things often come out when it doesn't really apply. It doesn't matter. The debate is over. The people are dead. Or things will come out in such a way as there'll be no action. We may learn things, but nobody will be indicted, as we've already seen with James Comey in round one.
Right.
This is kind of where I think we're going, and the fact that President Trump gave Attorney General Barr complete power to release anything and everything, and he's released nothing, and we're still relying on the fact that Judicial Watch is going to court and suing piece by piece for this information that should be, William Barr should take his magic wand and say, declassified, unredacted, people, America, read it, see what happens, see what your government has been doing, and decide what, you know, let us figure it out. I mean, this is just absolutely the scandal of our time that is kind of really just spinning into kind of a dark place where I don't really think we're ever going to get what we want in terms of light and understanding and justice.
Yeah. I was outraged when he let Comey slide. I'm really concerned that he can't let McCabe, but he might let him slide. And
Why not? That's what he's supposed to do. I really believe that's what. Listen, we meet William Barr in American history as a public person, going back to George H.W. Bush administration, where he was Attorney General at a young age, and he was known. I just go back to William Sapphire, the great late New York Times columnist, who was a great reporter, great sources. Even though he was a columnist, you know, he was really an investigative columnist as opposed to most people who are sort of thumbsuckers and such. And he was on to Barr very early on as the man he called the cover-up general.
Hmm.
Why did he call him that? Because there were a number of scandals at the time which do still kind of tie into today, although it's very complicated. Iraqgate, so-called, BCCI, which, when Barr comes in, these were things that exposed the intelligence world, just like today, the Justice Department, just like today, and Attorney General Barr basically covered it up, covered up everything, confined things. For example, BCCI, Sapphire wrote, was essentially the whole thing was confined to a little area of Florida, I think it was Tampa, as opposed to the tentacles that spread everywhere, including, it was thought, to the CIA and other agencies. This was how they did damage control. Barr's first attorney generalship was essentially damage control for the deep state. He was a Bush guy.
Right.
I don't know why Trump picked him. It was terrible advice, supposedly, you know, from, I don't know, Joseph DeGeneva or some well-meaning person. I don't know, but somehow he picked this guy. And I think he picked a Bush man, a deep state bro, and that's kind of where we are. And yet conservatives remain extremely optimistic, and again, I hope I'm wrong. I hope my pessimism is wrong. I hope everyone says, "Oh, you're so cynical," and prove me wrong. But this is just what it looks like to date, and I have not seen anything to essentially shake that terrible first impression I had when I first heard he was coming on.
Yeah, but your assessments are well-researched, and so I'm going to stand with you on that because I'm very concerned about this. Do you find it incredible that the Department of Justice, with a budget of $28 billion, are unable to get done what Judicial Watch does with mere pennies in comparison?
Well, yes and no, because, you know, going to what we were just talking about, mm-hmm. I don't think the Justice Department wants to do what Judicial Watch does, because it wouldn't cost any money. There would be no budget. All, again, going back to Barr's powers, it's easy to say redact this, declassify that, roll it out. You know, it's not a process if the Justice Department were to do its job, but they are holding tight. I mean, look at the case of Cheryl Atkinson, the wonderful former CBS journalist, who is still trying to get her records on government spying on her. And this was something that started in the Obama years and continues into the Trump years. I have heard from actually Judicial Watch sources that the Trump Justice Department has been slower to release documents than the terribly slow Obama department. So we still are in the clutches of this sort of swamp, the deep state bureaucracy, and they are trying to wait us out. They're trying to hope Trump doesn't come back, and if he does, they're going to continue this same stonewalling. It's almost as if the president doesn't really have control of his own government, and that, I think, is the really terrible scandal of American history. It has nothing to do with Donald Trump. It is a fact that he exposed by coming in as the outsider, trying to restore the country, and finding that that Washington has other ideas and has no interest in restoring the country because they have a complete other agenda that has nothing to do with America First.
No, exactly. A very important question here. Where can the listeners follow and support your brilliant work and purchase your books, including The Red Thread?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. Everything is at my website, dianawest.net, and that would be all the columns as they appear and also the book links. The books are available in audiobook now as well, and that'll do it, dianawest.net.
And, of course, listeners, it's never too early to start buying gifts. I always start early myself. And, of course, we'll have all those links in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the On Air button, and right under the show description, you'll find all the links that Diana shared. Thanks so much, Diana, for sharing your tremendous assessments with us. We look forward to your return to the show. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.
Oh. Thank you, Audrey.